Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome in. I'm Mercamp with you until 9 o'clock. You heard the highlights from a busy, busy day before Selection Sunday. You heard wins by Duke. That pass from Zion to Trey Jones was, I almost want to say unreal. And then, I forget who I saw do it. And then I saw a highlight from an NBA game yesterday, and it was an almost identical pass. But that just shows how next level Zion Williamson is. You had Villanova taking the Big East again, and you also had Tennessee getting to the SEC title game. A lot of college basketball to do today. It's one of those rare times where we're in that time frame of, hey, it's college basketball time. We have to figure out what's going on here. Essentially, for someone like me, a lot of us think about the Chicago market. Not a big college basketball market. Not a big college basketball state right now, quite frankly, especially if we're looking at the play of all the teams that should matter in this state. Illinois, DePaul, Loyola didn't get in. Bradley did. We'll get to Bradley a little bit later. We got a lot to do this morning. Tons of college basketball, as I mentioned, and just kind of a lot of odds and ends, hodgepodge stuff off of that. Mark Gonzalez from the Chicago Tribune is out in Arizona. He wrote about Albert Almora, and I thought it was really interesting, so we'll talk to him at 8 o'clock. I found one of the best recent moments in tanking in the NBA. So it's just a little fun thing. We'll go through that. And there was one other moment in not necessarily tanking history, but just really unique ways to blow a game that we'll go back to. And it has a tie-in to the Bulls right now and this station. So we got a lot to do today. And maybe a couple mentions of NFL free agency, where the Bears stand, where other teams stand. Free agency, the first wave, and really even the second wave, starts to wind down a little bit. The highlights on the way in were from the Villanova Radio Network and ESPN. 312-644-6767, number 670-11 on the text line. And I guess where I want to start today, part of it is just kind of taking the step back from the media perspective, and just as someone that more casually follows college basketball, I don't really have any allegiances when it comes to your major schools. Quite frankly, for the only school I kind of care about, the fact they got to a semifinal of their conference tournament is damn near a miracle in NIU. But for Selection Sunday, for how you consume, I'm always interested in how people consume sports, how it fits into what they do. Everybody does a bracket at this point, but you know, are there terms put on a bracket? You think like fantasy football season. Sometimes it's either whoever wins, sure, gets money or gets whatever. Is there something for somebody who finishes in last? You have punishments. Those kind of things are kind of what I'm interested in with the college basketball tournament. Because quite frankly, outside of, you know, Eli on the other side of the glass, who writes about college basketball for the Action Network, and he's a must follow all the time, but especially this time of year when you're trying to figure out not just who to pick in your bracket, but also who to maybe try and make some money off of in the tournament and the conference tournaments. And Eli's watching college basketball. He watches a lot of missed jumpers. Eli loves watching missed jumpers. And I always say it because he smiles, but it kind of makes him a little bit mad.
It really doesn't, because okay. You watched yesterday, and just a quick minute on Washington and Oregon in the Pac-12 title game. Washington scored 2 points in 10 minutes. So I really can't defend that.
Oh, wow. The Pac-12 in general, not great. That's one thing. There are few things that I know as facts going into Selection Sunday. One of the few things that I know for sure is that the Pac-12 sucks, and they'll probably get more teams in than they should because they're a Power 5 conference. That's one of the few things I know. But 312-644-6767, 6711 on the text line. What part of the tournament do you like the most, and how do you consume it? Listen, I don't know that any of us are truly as productive. I know there's always the serve or the numbers crunched every year of trying to estimate how many dollars or hours are wasted during the NCAA tournament, and especially this upcoming first weekend, because the first weekend is absolute insanity. And I would like to fully admit from jump, I probably messed up in a way. Now, of course, there are things much bigger than sports, but the weekend before I close on this condo that my wife and I are getting into is the first weekend of the tournament. So I've really got to work on balancing packing, getting everything squared away, and having fun watching the tournament, doing my job as well, because that's part of it. But how you consume the NCAA tournament, how much do you truly care about upsets and seeing either the best versus getting the best stories? Sometimes they coincide. I think you could say this: people just want to see Zion Williamson. And I think some of it is the fact that he's just straight so damn good. Some of it is the fact that pretty much every media outlet makes sure you see everything that he does. So I think there's an aspect to that as well. And just the fact that Duke has so many of your top guys. In theory, could be three of the top four picks. Don't know about Cam Reddish anymore. But having Zion, having RJ Barrett, for guys like myself that maybe look at college basketball from more of an NBA lens, that's how I'm going to be consuming the tournament. Is, for me, it's a one-stop shop to see all these different teams and players that maybe I don't get a lot of opportunity to see. I've seen a good amount of Ja Morant highlights, but have I seen him in the greater context of how he does when things aren't going right, how he does against certain coverages? Those are the kind of things that I think that appeal to me when I'm watching the tournament, is just getting more info about the guys that I might be seeing at the next level, while also just trying to, as I'm seeing some of these teams and players for the first time, see different styles, see different coaches. Every once in a while, you'll get someone that's doing something different offensively, or a different defensive coverage that could just be throwing off a traditional power. If it's, a lot of times it seems like those kind of things are happening at your mid-major schools, because a lot of times it's just straight out of necessity because they know they don't have the talent level necessarily to match up with your Dukes, with, you know, your Big Ten teams that are going to be at the top, Michigan, Michigan State today in your Big Ten title game. So there's a lot that goes into how I end up trying to consume the tournament. But I want to know how you do. If it's just straight sit down, watch basketball, have your bracket, and just hope for the best. Hope that you win your pool, get those bragging rights. 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. And I should mention, I said before, Eli's on the other side of the glass. We'll be hearing him throughout the show because, quite frankly, you know, you could always, it would just feel dumb to have asked Eli to book a different college basketball expert when Eli has been covering it all year. God bless him through all the preseason tournaments all the way through now. So we're definitely going to lean on Eli a little bit just to learn about, I don't know anything about who's really going to be on the bubble outside of that. Apparently it's a bad bubble. Bad bubble this year. Dirty bubble. I don't know. So we're going to lean on Eli today. Follow him on Twitter at Eli Hershkovich. And have to mention, he will be in the spot that I'm in right now tonight after the Bulls game until 10 o'clock with Jordan Stone breaking down the bracket. So probably set, what, 7:30-ish, about that time, sometime between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, unless Bulls-Kings goes to overtime or something.
Right, unless the Bulls decide to tank at the end, give them an open three, and send it to overtime about 7:30.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the 8 o'clock hour after we talk to Mark Gonzalez from the Tribune. Yeah, there's, boy, I cannot get over how, I'll just say this for now. The Pelicans found a way to blow a game that they shouldn't have lost. And I don't think it was conscious or anything. It's just one of those when bad teams are bad teams and you just sometimes wonder why. It's one of those days where you absolutely found out why. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. And 708 texter says his biggest thing for the tournament is to root for is rooting for scumbags like Ralph Sampson or Bruce Pearl to lose. Ralph Sampson, Kelvin Sampson. There we go. Got to get my Sampsons correct. And that's another thing that can make it easy when you're determining, especially your bracket calls, because it's the one time for me personally. My wife wants to get involved in sports as she wants to fill out a bracket. Even when I try to, you know, go visit my brothers and my mom a couple times a month at least, we can get my mom to fill out a bracket. You don't actually say the names of the schools. You just say the mascots, and she picks who she wants to win by mascots. And the thing is, a lot of times you end up getting, I think that's part of the fun of it, is being as random as the NCAA tournament can be. It's those people that are barely even cursory sports fans that can have as much fun looking at their bracket, being involved, and sometimes even winning as much as guys like myself, guys like you listening out there that pay attention enough to at least you're listening to sports radio on a Sunday morning at what, just after 7 o'clock. So I think that's part of the reason that I enjoy the tournament is because for me, I can flip the switch off a little bit of always hyper analysis and trying to figure out exactly what's going on and just enjoy sports for sports. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. For those of us that, while we're talking to Gonzo at 8, there's so much conversation around Cubs lineup construction and the lineup Eastas and all that stuff and Tyler Chatwood and Albert Almora and what are the Cubs, how they fit in the division, going through everything else. You can just kind of take a break from that. Take a break from Zach LaVine being willing to pay Jim Boylan's fine for getting kicked out of a game. From the Bears and whatever they're doing. From the Blackhawks and just looking at something different and just having fun with it. I really think that's all there is to it. And I don't think, while of course we're going to look into it, but more than that, just having the option while watching games to just let go. And I'm perfectly fine with that. There's nothing wrong with letting go for once and just allowing yourself to just truly enjoy what's going on. And maybe it's just part of this business and sports being the job and having to take it seriously, know what you're talking about, that I think the tournament allows those opportunities to just kind of let loose, enjoy the games, enjoy, root for close games, root for finishes. If you want to, as a 708 texter said, root against coaches or players that you deem to be bad people. If you want to do that, that's fine. If nothing else, use it as a tiebreaker. As I look at teams that are, or, you know, like for me, a team from the conference that I came from, the MAC, Buffalo's good. I don't know how they lost to NIU at NIU, but hey, it happened. Great for the NIU program, but that's about it. 312-644-6767-6711 on the text line. When we come back, we'll start kind of looking at seeding that matters and some of what's on the bubble, who we need to be caring about, how many teams are really going to be just left out that may actually have a legitimate gripe. It doesn't feel like there's that many this year, but we'll ask Eli about it. On the other side, I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock on The Score. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. Highlight from CBS. And yeah, we're going to have, in Chicago, you're going to have Big Ten title game today. Michigan, Michigan State, which seems like what it should be for the way most of your Big Ten season went. The one thing that I'm very happy about, and I know Connor McKnight will get mad at me, but it's fine. The fact that Wisconsin is nowhere near the Big Ten title game is a big win. Really a big win. Because I understand it's effective. A lot of the time, the style that Wisconsin plays works. But, boy, you can keep it. If that was my school, I'd be like, man, this is a rough, rough watch. I mean, yeah. Just keep Michigan or keep Wisconsin away from my TV screen when they're playing basketball, and I'm a happy person. I have nothing against the school in general, just the style that they play. That's all. 312-644-6767. 6711 on the text line. In the first hour, we're talking a lot about it, the fact that it's Selection Sunday and how you enjoy and consume the NCAA tournament. And on a day like today, is it scramble mode of trying to learn about everybody so that way when the bracket's revealed, you kind of have an idea outside of just hearing what talking heads are saying about who would be a popular upset pick or all that kind of stuff? Because that's the other thing, too. And it kind of goes along with what I was saying before about when you get family involved, a lot of times, you know, they're smart enough to at least look at the seed numbers and just take the higher seeds the entire way. And I don't find that fun because maybe it's because I just don't take the bracket that seriously. I like trying to pick the upsets. There are years where I definitely pick way too many of them, but you know, I enjoy doing it as opposed to maybe it's your sister or wife or mom or brother or cousin that just doesn't pay any attention to college basketball, that just goes like one seeds all the way and just goes chalk throughout most of your bracket. They end up winning, but you never take them seriously with it because it's no fun. You know, maybe you don't pick Loyola to the Final Four every year, something along those lines, but, you know, a couple get to the Sweet 16, kind of follow the trends and just go accordingly. But I do want to bring in Eli here, writing about college basketball for the Action Network. And just, Eli, as we look at what we've got going into Selection Sunday, I know there's not a whole lot left to be determined, but what surprised you going into yesterday, or is some of the talk leading into Selection Sunday?
The one seeds, because a lot of the games yesterday and into the week are determining factors in that, and you would expect that going into, obviously, the biggest day of the year for college basketball leading up to the NCAA tournament, Selection Sunday. But Gonzaga losing to St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference tournament earlier this week, they have a shot at getting that one seed. But then you look at Michigan State, a team you brought up. Can they win today against Michigan? Because the big factor for me today, if Michigan gets, or Michigan State gets that win against the Wolverines, they're probably getting a one seed. I mean, you have Gonzaga, you have Duke and Virginia basically locked in.
Yeah.
And then who gets the other two? Gonzaga, North Carolina, even though they lost to Duke in the semifinal of the ACC tournament, they have a chance at it. And then the Big Ten winner, Tennessee also, if they win the SEC tournament, they have a shot. But Michigan State's point guard, Cassius Winston, did a story earlier this week, one of the most valuable players in college basketball against the spread. So he's probably worth 3 or 4 points. He's banged up, has knee tendonitis, a foot injury, an ankle injury as well. Michigan State has beaten Michigan twice this year, so a huge game. I don't think the Wolverines get that one seed if they win. Mm-hmm. Michigan State, on the other hand, that's the biggest surprise for me because I thought they were going to win the Big Ten tournament. I thought they were going to get the one seed, but now Winston's injury changes everything from the last couple days into one of the biggest matchups of the year, even though they've already faced twice.
So as we talk about the one seeds, if we're not even saying going, if we're not going by resume, but who you think are the four best teams, and I know that's not how the committee necessarily determines it, but just who are the four best teams at the moment?
Duke's number one, and it's not just a crutch. Like,
even I can tell Duke is kind of on another level.
Exactly. But it all changes with Zion.
Right.
Their interior defense still struggles. I brought that up to you last week. That's their biggest issue, is defending the rim, even with one of the best rim protectors in the country. But then you look at how much he changes their transition offense. You saw that zip pass to Trey Jones yesterday. And I got a lot of responses on Twitter saying, oh, I brought this up. Zion Williamson is one of the, if not the only player that can make that pass in college basketball. And a lot of people said, well, a lot of people could. Another forward in Florida State, really good athletic big. But the precision between the two bigs on Florida State to make that pass, in transition, mind you, in the moment, you could say any other player can make that pass. I personally don't think so. What do you think, Rick, watching that play?
Yeah, and it's just how quick that decision was made. It's not like he was, what, three or four dribbles after getting a rebound. It was pretty much get your rebound, turn around, maybe one dribble, and then he had the vision and was able to process it quick enough to see Trey Jones leaking out the way he was. That the decision-making, as much as the precision of the pass itself, I think is probably what separates Zion. I think that's part of what just makes him so unique, is that he has clear NBA style decision making and vision that you just don't see from a lot of bigs on the college level, where it seems like they'll get in the post or they'll decide, hey, I'm driving, and that's it. There's no ability to switch their mindset until they get stopped. There's no way to anticipate that, oh, I see this guy's coming over, I should be kicking it out to the corner, because that's the guy who was left open by the double coming down.
Exactly. And again, like you mentioned, long story short, in the moment, no other college basketball player makes that play. You could say there are other athletic bigs, some really good point guards in the country. Obviously, Josh Perkins of Gonzaga brought up the Bulldogs earlier, one of the best passers in the country. Some other good point guards. Trey Jones for Duke is a great point guard too. More of a defensive-minded guy overall. But in the moment, no other player makes that pass. Anyways, Duke overall, best team in college basketball with Zion. Without him, it's a different story, but he's healthy, ready to go for the tournament. Virginia is probably my second overall seed. And in terms of 1-4 in college basketball, they both align too. Mm-hmm. I know they've lost to Duke twice this season, and I might fade Virginia in the tournament. I mean, you watched that game against Florida State on Friday, and you could say from a gambling perspective, and I think this way too, just because I'm betting on all these games, or a lot of them, is that Virginia on Friday already had that March Madness mindset. You lose to a 16 seed last year. You're gunning for, yes, an ACC title, but your mind is also on getting revenge in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So I'm not putting that loss so much against them as I would if they're facing a team that has a similar lineup to a Florida State that beat them on Friday that has bigs and can push the tempo. Because Virginia plays in a slow tempo offense. Mm-hmm. So if you're giving up a lot of points and your 3-point shooting is struggling like Virginia did on Friday, you're not going to have a lot of possessions to come back in a game against a team that's pushing the floor so often. So from that perspective, while I have those issues with Virginia, still the second best team in college basketball, a legit NBA prospect, top lottery pick likely this season, or this June come the NBA draft in DeAndre Hunter, some good guards in Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, really good point guard. So Virginia has the pieces. Tony Bennett's pack line defense has a shot to get to the Final Four. First time in Bennett's career, obviously. And their offense, too. I mentioned, yes, their offense can struggle. But the highest adjusted offensive efficiency in Tony Bennett's career at Virginia. So one of the best Hoos offenses that they've ever had on the East Coast. And then my third overall seed and the third best team to me in college basketball is still probably Gonzaga. And I get if the listeners are saying, you just harped on Gonzaga for losing to St. Mary's. You just harped on Virginia for losing to Florida State on Friday. Gonzaga still has one of the best front courts in the country in Rui Hachimura and Brandon Clark. And for those of you that haven't watched Hachimura, if the Bulls didn't draft Wendell Carter Jr., I would not have been surprised or wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls land the number four pick and they had gotten Hachimura come June, or they would get Hachimura come June if they didn't, again, just get a big last season. Clark and Hachimura are really good. Josh Perkins, Zach Norvell, a Simeon grad from Chicago, can gun it from deep. And when they get their offense going in transition, this is one of the hardest teams to stop. Because if you have bigs again that can match up and rebound against their front line, it's going to be difficult to stop or to for Gonzaga to match up with that. But if Gonzaga is able to control the glass and control the tempo, this team will be in the Final Four and have a shot at cutting down the Nets on April 8th. And then the last team is Tennessee. Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield can both shoot it. Grant Williams, one of the best players, one of the best bigs in college basketball. Jordan Bone.
You've been on Tennessee all year.
I picked them 35-1 to win the national title before the season. I actually flipped my opinion on Tennessee-Kentucky before the game yesterday. I thought Kentucky was the better team going into it. They were up 7 with like 3 minutes left. And then Grant Williams went off, hit like 3 threes down the stretch. Admiral Schofield, who had a big game against Gonzaga earlier this year, came up big. And again, Jordan Bone is the key. Everyone talks about guard play in the tournament. His evolution at the point guard position for the Vols has changed that team, even though they've regressed defensively.
That's the info that you get from Eli. And the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Gerber Collision and Glass. When do you get it to Gerber? When you back into someone who's backing out. That's when you get it to Gerber. Locations throughout Chicagoland. Visit GerberCollision.com or call 877-7-GERBER to find your nearest Gerber location. So I mentioned this in the first segment. Is it true that this year there's not as much consternation about the bubble in and of itself? Because it just seems like by the traditional way we look at who should be a tournament quality team and not, that the bubble just straight kind of sucks this year. But it's more, if there's going to be consternation after the selection show, it's going to be maybe about seeding of teams that actually do matter.
Exactly. And well, to that point though, I brought up the Pac-12. If Belmont, who's an at-large team, and they lost to Murray State, John Morant, a lot of people know his name for the Bulls, to potentially get John Morant in the NBA draft come June. But Belmont is still Rick Bird. Rick Camp, you would love Rick Bird as a coach. One of the best just offensive schemers in college basketball. Okay. If Belmont gets in, if they don't, I don't want you watching the NIT. I want you saving your eyes from watching that, because you should just keep your attention on March Madness if you're going to watch any.
I'll resist the urge to watch the NIT. I think I can swing that one.
I know it's going to be tough for you, but I hope you're able to sustain some madness here come March Madness and keep it off the NIT. But Belmont is my biggest issue because the Pac-12 is probably going to get 3 teams in, as mm-hmm. scary and sad as that is, after betting on and watching Washington just slip away. Their offense has been so bad. And the funny thing is, I brought up their 2 points in 10 minutes in the second half.
Yeah.
In the first 10 minutes of the second half. Those 2 points were on a turnover and a dunk. So it wasn't even in the half court.
It wasn't even offensive efficiency.
It was so frustrating. Yeah, it was just terrible to watch. Arizona State, a lot of people know Bobby Hurley, mm-hmm. who's one of the better coaches in the country, but that team has been so inconsistent. They lost to Princeton earlier in the year at home. They've had some really other bad losses. Washington State, who's in the bottom tier of the Pac-12, they lost to them at home. But because they made the Pac-12 semifinal and lost to Oregon, who won the Pac-12 tournament overall, what a job by Dana Altman, by the way. Some great Bill Walton comments on him yesterday, considering him one of the best coaches in the country. Which, if you've ever heard Bill Walton, he will overemphasize anything Pac-12 basketball. But yeah, that's going to be my biggest issue. I wouldn't even say the seeding so much, because mm-hmm. I'm not even worried about that. I'm worried about my Belmont Bruins getting in Rick Bird, because they deserve it. And you can't just say, well, you could say, yes, the Pac-12 is a major conference. And you could say TCU deserves to get in because they play in the Big 12. And would Belmont have a better record than TCU in the Big 12? But on the Pac-12 level, the Pac-12 is, to me, a mid-major conference this year. That's how bad it's been. So at large bids-wise, Pac-12, please just get at most one team in more into March Madness.
312-644-6767 is the number. 670-11 on the text line. Once again, Eli's going to be on tonight with Jordan Stone, breaking down the bracket after the Bulls game, so probably around 7:30-ish. Until 10 o'clock. So make sure, I mean, you should be tuned all day to the station anyway, because so I'm here till 9. Then from 9 to noon, you have Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron. Noon to 4, Herb Lawrence and Kevin Zipak. That's a show where honestly say I have no idea exactly what it's going to be, but I'm here for it. Then bridging the gap to Bulls basketball is going to be David Schuster. Then I know it's horrible timing with the selection show, but have the selection show on, have the volume down, listen to the radio call of Bulls Kings, because the Kings are a really fun team to watch. My favorite team to watch on League Pass this year has been the Kings, and it's not particularly close either. So make sure to keep it tuned here for that. And then after Bulls Kings, you're going to have Eli, you're going to have Jordan Stone breaking down the bracket. We're going to take a quick timeout, come back, and there is the local story in the tournament, which is pretty much the antithesis of last year's. We'll mention Bradley. They finally put out a real statement, and just how much of a misstep it is for them. And then another thing, one more thing I noticed watching tournament games yesterday, and then it bridges over to baseball, which will lead us right into Gonzo to talk Cubs at the top of the hour. I'm Recamp with you until 9 on The Score.
Brown. Low house. Good if it goes. That's it. Bradley is going to the NCAA tournament. For the first time in 13 years.
Getting some strong Bradley fight song at the end of the highlight. That was from CBS. And yeah, think about where we were a week ago. I came in here on a Sunday, and the front page of the sports section was Bradley getting into the tournament, upsetting Loyola, winning the Missouri Valley. And where we are now this Sunday, little bit different. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock at the top of the hour. We'll switch gears and talk Cubs with Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune. He had some good notes, his spring training notes in the Sunday Trib today. Also talked with other players about Albert Almora. So there's a lot of good stuff to get to with Gonzo. But Bradley had themselves a prime opportunity, as probably of all the mid-major schools that can be relevant from time to time, Bradley is the one you might forget about if you were asked to list them. People will say Loyola. People will say, you know, the ones closer to the city, UIC. People will say SIU, even though it's been a minute for them too. You know, Illinois State, all that. But Bradley has the opportunity. They were front page news in a Chicago newspaper. And then come out going against journalist Dave Reynolds for the Peoria Journal Star that's been covering Bradley for almost 30 years. And it's just a refrain that we hear a lot nowadays for people that do not understand the role of the media, essentially saying Dave Reynolds shouldn't be around this team because he's not helping the brand. Here's something that I think is becoming more and more evident nowadays, and has certainly been driven home the last few days, and Bradley finally on Twitter putting out a statement about how wrong they were, about how they handled the situation with Dave Reynolds. The media is not, and I hate even using the term the media, because it's an industry. It's not like saying construction workers. They're all different. There's a bunch of different types, all that stuff. But just the media is not PR, not public relations. Two very different things. Sometimes people will work for one side and then maybe get a different job on the other, but it's because they have a skill set that lends to both. You have to have similar skills to do media and also to do PR or marketing, but they are completely different entities. So if you are a fan of a team and a beat writer isn't writing positive things, it's not their job just to write the positive. Their job is to write about what they observe and what they hear about from talking to their sources around the team and talking to players and talking to coaches or management or whatever. So the fact that Bradley had this prime opportunity, everybody was waiting to have an Illinois team in the tournament, to see coming off of Loyola last year, there was all that buildup from last year of people having an appetite for this, for having one of those teams, and Bradley has a chance to be as relevant as it's ever been, at least recently, and they do this, and they're still relevant, but I can't count the amount of times I've seen tweets, I've seen even just the text line right now, people saying they'll be paying attention to Bradley to root against them. I mean, that's how bad. Sometimes, you know, we're just like, okay, it's the internet is written in ink, but sometimes, you know, someone will spout off and it's spur of the moment and, you know, whatever, and you can kind of excuse it, but it's about as opposite of a situation that would deserve that as humanly possible. So it's just a really, really bad look. Yeah. And once again, it's not the job of a beat writer to pump up a team that they cover or anything along those lines. Their job is to report on what is happening, not to pump up the team that they cover. There's very few instances where, sure, most teams will have someone that covers the team for them. But when you talk about a guy like Mark Gonzalez that we're going to talk to in just over 10 minutes, his job isn't just to write fluff pieces on the Cubs. His job is to write about what's going on, find angles that are interesting to him, and write about them for the Chicago Tribune. He works for the Tribune, not for the Cubs. Completely different thing. Just because you're around them all the time doesn't mean you work for them. And that's part of the whole, you know, when we talk about journalistic integrity, I think it's interesting when you bring it into our realm of sports radio, because it's something that I honestly struggle with sometimes, is how much should you be allowed, maybe not allowed, but let your sensibilities possibly as a fan play into how you break down or cover a team. Now, there's not as many of us at the radio station that are truly covering teams. But when I look at it, I realize, and maybe this is just the way I work, is since being in this industry and you know, hearing stuff behind the scenes about teams, my fandom in those teams has definitely diminished. I don't think I'm anywhere near as much of a fan as I used to be, just because it's my job. And mind you, I love my job, so I have no issues with it. 815 Texter says, you know what, you media guys, that's a great start, say there's no such thing as bad publicity. There's some bad publicity out there. There's bad publicity to be had. 630 Texter, that's patently false. You won't see a negative ever word about Notre Dame or Northwestern in certain publications. I don't think that's true either. I think while Northwestern basketball has, think about what the expectations were the last couple of years for Northwestern basketball and just how bad they've been. I know on these airwaves, it hasn't been talked about in depth because, quite frankly, not enough people care. But it has been brought up. Boy, remember when Northwestern basketball was going to be the team in the Illinois team that actually mattered for a while? That lasted one season. 312-644-6767-6711 on the text line.
So Bradley tweeted out a couple things. Poor media management on their end, too. This came out on Friday at 11:56 p.m. at night. So you could tell they're frantically struggling to figure out what they're going to do when the story releases. Here's the first tweet just before midnight on Friday, or into Saturday, I guess. During the 2018-19 season, the amount of access granted to Peoria Journal star reporter Dave Reynolds was reduced. At the time, his access to the Bradley basketball program was limited. We discussed the issues that led to the policy change with the PJS sports editor, and the level of access has remained consistent the last several weeks. Our focus is on the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. Bradley got 15 retweets, 90 favorites, 256 replies. That's all you need to know about what people think about their program right now.
Absolutely. And there's another instance I can think of offhand, and it's with the New York Knicks. James Dolan is a, as we saw this week with a fan, he's very sensitive. And it's been a longstanding thing now for a while that James Dolan doesn't like the New York Daily News because they just straight don't speak positively enough about the Knicks, and how Stephen Bodie, the Knicks beat reporter for the Knicks, is either not allowed or his access is extremely limited because of James Dolan, one of the worst owners. You could easily say one of the worst owners in the NBA. And especially in sports. So here's the cut from the Michael Kay Show in New York of James Dolan talking about that.
Because you're in front of me, I can't change the way of stuff I said before. And since you're in front of you, I want to ask you this. I couldn't disagree with you more. I know you don't like the Daily News, but barring them from press conferences and conference calls, I just don't get it. Why?
The Daily News, I mean, there are a couple of, you know, the Daily News and news, you know, look, in New York, right? Of course, New York's a tough press market just mm-hmm. to start off with, right? I mean, even you guys are tough, right? And so we come to expect that. But there are certain journalists, right? They actually wish ill will towards the team, mm-hmm. Right? They don't want to see the team win. They don't want to see the team be successful, right? I mean, they have their own personal axes to grind, right? And, you know, they come in with the, you know, intent of, I mean, they've never written a positive story about the team. Like the Porzingis trade, you know, those guys are like their most horrible thing. Another horrible thing has happened, right? It actually wasn't a horrible thing, mm-hmm. right? And they knew it. They don't care. Right.
But still, what is it accomplished by banning them? It makes you look like the bad guy, like you're pressing down the media. Because
I don't worry about how I look. I worry about wins and losses.
But there's fairness. I mean, every newspaper should be allowed into every newsmaking event. It's just the American way.
They are allowed they are allowed full access via the NBA. NBA has access rules.
Right.
We totally abide by that.
But not a conference call.
If we're going to have our own conference call, look, if I have a press conference and I'm going to announce something, I get to invite who I want to the mm-hmm. press conference, right? I don't have to invite everybody, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a public servant, right?
But the Knicks are owned by the public. I mean, you're the
no,
one who puts the bills.
No, the Knicks are not owned by the public.
But it's a public trust. I mean,
the Knicks are owned by the shareholders of the company, of which I'm the majority shareholder, right? Mm-hmm. No.
But don't you think banning them from a press conference does more damage than anything they could going to the press conference and writing something negative?
I think we're sending them a message.
But it's not working. They're still negative about you.
Yeah, that's an awful look for James Dolan. For a guy that's been pretty crappy as an owner, to then lose any sort of benefit of the doubt, or at least it should lose benefit of the doubt with the fans for doing that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's what Bradley's dealing with this time and at this time. And, you know, they should be taking advantage of every moment they get because I would assume they're a likely first round out. They're not the quality of a team of Loyola's last year. So what we're going to do is take a timeout, come back. Top of the hour here, we're going to talk with Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune. Talk about interesting stuff with the Cubs. He wrote about Albert Almora, some of his takeaways from the last day or two in Arizona. I'm Rick Camp, and I'm with you until 9 o'clock on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.